From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, our weekly conversation with BlackAgendaReport.com's Margaret Kimberly. Margaret Kimberly, welcome. Pleasure to speak with you again.
Thank you, Don.
So now, this week's column is a twist on a theme that we heard throughout the Barack Obama administration, where Obama was considered by BlackAgendaReport.com and others as the more effective evil. Now we say Trump is the less effective evil. Let's go into that some.
Yes, we at Black Agenda Report, you know, in response to the constant argument that Democrats are the lesser of two evils, we said that Obama was the more effective evil. Having protection as being the first black president, as being a Democrat, Democrats actually are able to get away with more evil doing than Republicans are. So we said he was just more effectively evil, not less evil. Trump, on the other hand, is the ineffective evil because Democrats, not only do they like Democrats, but for many of them, unfortunately, it's all about presentation. And if you have the right manners and say the right things and have the right friends, you can get away with, as Obama did, claiming a right to kill American citizens. And most Democrats say nothing. The seven nations that Trump chose for this travel restrictions, they were all chosen by Obama. These are all countries that have been attacked, where people have been killed by Bush and by Obama. But Trump, because of his demeanor, is called evil, and I'm opposed to this ban. I believe it is illegal, and I believe it is wrong. But my point in writing this column was to just remind people what it is that his predecessors have gotten away with, and that each president builds on the wrongdoing of the predecessor. So Bush claims a right to detain indefinitely without charge or trial. Obama goes him one better and claims a right to kill without charge or trial. Obama has certain travel restrictions on these seven nations, and Trump has a blanket restriction. So each one hands off to the other, and each president builds upon the diminution of our civil and human rights. And it goes on and on and on with each president.
You know, just in terms of the differences in form, for example, Obama could say, you know, I'm from Kenya, ultimately, in terms of ancestry on one side of my family. And because of right to protect and freedom, installs AFRICOM across the African continent. If Trump had done that, it would be because Steve Bannon and white supremacy.
Yes.
And so, and what's going to be interesting to see what happens if Trump actually is serious, I mean, who knows, about non-intervention, in other words, no more regime change operations, et cetera. AFRICOM really has less of a role than the NATO that he declared obsolete. And look to see what happens then. And if he were to shut down AFRICOM, is he still a white supremacist as opposed to Obama being, I don't know, a pan-Africanist?
Well, it'll be, yes, you're right. It'll be interesting to see. I doubt that there'll be any dismantling of military infrastructure the way that has happened with AFRICOM. It's highly unlikely that that will be undone. I do hope that he sticks with his promise to do away with regime change. You know, there are refugees from Syria because of Obama. He and his then Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, embarked on a regime change scheme and nearly destroyed this nation and created millions of refugees. There wouldn't be any Syrian refugees if it weren't for Obama. Because he did the same thing in Libya and got away with it, and they thought they could do the same thing with Syria and work with the Gulf states like Saudi Arabia and send terrorists into the country and destroy it. So we shall see how much of this he changes. I am more concerned about Trump's policy toward China and Iran. I don't think it's likely to change. You know, things have changed. Russia, China, Iran have a very strong alliance. I don't see anybody being pulled off. I don't see Russia putting up with it. Russia doesn't trust American presidents, and with good reason. So I don't know how much of that Trump will be able to do. But I think these are dangerous times, regardless of who the president is going to be. That Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump present different dangers. But there's no safety in any of these people. You know, people say Trump is not my president, and he's not my president. But I also say, if you care about peace, if you care about justice, then you never get a president.
Yeah, that's true. That's for sure. You know, let's get on the list here. Well, we've got Syria, which you named, and Libya, which you named. We have Yemen, where Saudi Arabia has been conducting an air war for almost 2 years now against that population, driving maybe 10 million people into starvation, refugee status, etc. And that has been an air campaign guided by American AWACS, certainly with U.S. command and control. And that seems to be turning, by the way, instead of U.S.-backed Air Force, with the Saudis being the Air Force for Al-Qaeda, which is conducting the ground war there. The U.S. actually bombed Al-Qaeda the other day, which may signal some change. But Sudan, of course, you've had the U.S.-backed break-off of South Sudan. Somalia is a failed state because of the United States. Iran is on that list, actually, because Jimmy Carter put it on the list in 1979 when the list was created. And, of course, Iraq, which has been destroyed by the United States in both a slow and fast-moving operation since 1991.
Yes, it's a long and terrible list, and I'm of two minds about these protests. It's a good thing for people to protest an illegal action coming from the White House. But people need to protest when the United States kills people in these countries. And all of these countries, people have been killed by the United States directly or indirectly, through direct military attack or through sanctions that starve people to death, or helping a proxy, which destroys a country, and it's in the case of Saudi Arabia against Yemen. So America has a lot of blood on its hand, and it started well before Donald Trump came to the White House. He's only been president for, I guess, it's a week and a half. So I stand with people who protest wrongdoing, but people should have been protesting sooner. And there's a lot of debate, as you know, about when people protested and who they protested, and whether you can point out that people should have protested sooner. I say that we can point that out, try to bring people along, but I think we need to point out what should have been protested in the past. So, and also, I'm the other reason I wrote this column is I am concerned that the Democratic Party, who have thoroughly discredited themselves in a number of ways, they are now trying to act as though they are the bulwark of human rights, when just the opposite is true. We have members of Congress, Chuck Schumer and Gerald Nadler. Chuck Schumer was crying, and you know, but if Israel decides to kill people in Gaza again, he's very bloodthirsty and says that it's all good. So people need to know that Trump is doing what other presidents have done, building upon what predecessors did. And they also need to know that if anybody who's concerned about the human rights of people in these countries needs to be protesting Democratic Party policies as well.
Yeah, as you mentioned, the sections that they essentially just add an extra layer of review and a suspension of review for 90 days of the existing law. that imposed, you know, they mentioned Syria by name, and it also elsewhere mentions Iraq by name. But those again are legacies. They were added to this list, before the Obama administration. Although he recertified it several times, but otherwise it invokes section U.S. Code. It's 8 U.S. Code 1182 and 8 U.S. Code 1187 that lays out the criteria for designating countries as being areas of concern or, otherwise prescribed and required to go through this, which is already extreme vetting, by the way, although they didn't use the political term. And those lists developed by the secretaries of state going back to, the Carter administration all the way through John Kerry and including Hillary Clinton, Madeleine Albright, and some other darlings like Colin Powell.
Yes, it's when you said Madeleine Albright's name, I always sit up and take notice when I hear her name. She was asked about the sanctions that were imposed on Iraq for many years that were responsible for starving people, including children. She was specifically asked about the fact that it was estimated that half a million children in Iraq died because of sanctions. And her response was, it was a tough call, but we believe it was worth the price. And now she has said if there's a Muslim registry, which there is not, she would register as a Muslim. And she's getting, she's being applauded for saying this. And that's pretty disgraceful, that hypocrisy and that assumption that those words can be or should be forgotten. So she's no one for anybody to quote on this issue ever, nor any of the former secretaries of state. They all work hand in hand with presidents to bring destruction to many countries in the world, including these seven and others. So my hope is that as people protest, that those of us who are more knowledgeable, who have been more aware, I guess I should say, of how this country works, that we should not just disparage people who are only protesting now, but point out to them the importance of protesting at all, protesting the system, protesting the Democrats, not using anything that Trump does as a reason to run back to the Democratic Party, and there's always this temptation to do that, but that needs to stop. Democrats are to for anybody who is, and I'm no longer a Democrat, but anyone who still is a Democrat ought to be angry with their party because Trump is the president. Trump is president because of the Democrats' failures. And there should be, rather than continuing to spread foolish stories about Vladimir Putin, there should be some contrition on the part of the Democratic Party leadership. I thought it was interesting that protesters marched on Chuck Schumer's house in Brooklyn the other night,
yeah,
demanding that he stand up to Trump and not confirm, not vote for any Trump nominees. And I suppose that's all well and good, but they should have marched on Chuck Schumer's house on the night of November 8th because he was one of the Democrats who is the architect of their failure, making foolish statements about the Democrats would get Republican suburban voters to vote for Hillary. And it's very telling. Why do you want Republican votes if you're really Democrats? You should be trying to mine all the Democrats who are disaffected, but it's very telling about how and why they failed.
Well, they might have marched on Schumer back in October of 2002 as well when he voted for the Iraq War resolution and argued for it very strongly. And he didn't shed any tears over the million or so dead Iraqis since and the bombing of it. I was thinking when you said talking about Albright, Since she claimed now she's going to register as she's going to convert to Islam, if you have to register, they're invoking the specter of Muslim registration. If that means that she's either going to starve herself on a starvation diet or have somebody bomb her, because that's essentially
yes,
the treatment.
That's true. If she really wants Muslim to show solidarity, or she should go to one of these countries where people are suffering because of U.S. foreign policy. But yes, that's what I mean. Schumer and Congressman Nadler. And many of these people who are jumping on the bandwagon of popular outrage are not to be trusted. They are warmongers. They have created suffering in many countries. They have created a refugee crisis. You know, the United States does this, makes countries unlivable, and then tells people you can't escape. So these people are responsible for this entire situation, and they should not be allowed to forget it.
You know, Nadler particularly got me. On the one hand, he says that this policy, which at the time of its being implemented, I don't know what the aggregate effect is going to be, but there were 100 and some odd people who were detained for some number of hours and ultimately processed. You know, he, back in 2010, when Israel had its navy board some flotilla that was bringing medicine and food to the people of Gaza, the Israelis murdered 9 people, including an American. They're peace activists. And he justified that, saying that Israel's need to defend itself from terrorism from Hamas warranted that act. And on the other hand here, he balances against that people being detained and processed for hours at an airport, a major inconvenience for sure, but that's not justifiable. The killing of 9 people was, though.
Yes, everything has been turned upside down. The worst thing, murder, is being defended, justified, explained away, and the treatment that people are undergoing, while it's wrong, has been deemed the worst treatment imaginable. So these people are traitorous. They are traitorous to the rest of the world, to leftists in this country, and their entire history needs to be remembered, all of them. And we cannot allow the Democrats to worm their way back in to get support from Democrats. And we can't allow any of these people like Cory Booker to emerge as leaders in 2020. These are all still corporate Democrats. They have a right-wing foreign policy, and they are to be shunned. And there needs to be a constant effort to rebuild a truly progressive movement, and that means dumping the Democrats by definition. The Democrats cannot be a part of any effort to create a strong progressive party. They are irredeemable.
You know, you mentioned Cory Booker. He's an interesting one in the context right now. He's being lifted up to, you know, national stature at the same time that the people around him are attacking Davos for Secretary of Education because she's a privatizer, and yet he also was a major privatizer, aside from the drug thing he just pulled.
Oh, yeah. That's how he got his start. He got his start politically in Newark with the backing of some very right-wing organizations. His maiden speech, so to speak, was made at the Manhattan Institute, which is a major right-wing think tank. Backing from people like the Bradley Foundation and others that have connections with the Walmart Corporation and the Walton family. He made his bones. He raised a lot of money when he ran against the mayor of Newark, Sharp James. And people should have asked, well, where did this guy come from? Where did he get all this money? He got money from people like that. He, the school voucher, it started out with vouchers and then turned into charters to destroy public education in the name of improving public education. And Cory Booker was right there feeding at that trough. And, you know, and Betsy DeVos is, you know, she's not that much different from Obama's person. He
Arnie.
Was a major pirate. I'm blanking on his name. Arnie Duncan.
Arnie Duncan, yeah.
I remembered it. Obama's Secretary of Education, that was his whole thing, getting rid of public education in favor of charter schools. He said infamously that Hurricane Katrina was a good thing for
right.
New Orleans
right.
because it destroyed New Orleans' public education system. New Orleans has nothing but charter schools. And to say that it's insensitive, to say the least, to say anything good about Katrina, it shows you where he stood, where Obama stood, and how much continuity there is from president to president. And that was my point. There's continuity for all of these guys, from one to the next. One says, I have the right to detain. The next says, I have the right to kill. One stealthily backs charter schools. One openly backs charter schools. But unfortunately, there's more continuity than difference among U.S. presidents.
Now, and I'd like to parse this question of, you know, we're presented with the accomplished fact of people being organized and protesting. You know, we have questions about the mechanisms by which they became organized. Certainly a lot of people that we know that have been doing this stuff for years are, you know, very actively involved now, and it's more fertile soil for them, and so they're probably expressed larger than we've seen them for the last 8 years. And you have a Republican president that gooses that too, which of course makes the ether go away for a lot of folks that have been sleeping on the couch since for the last 8 years. But you have had a conversation with someone a few days back, and it was essentially raising that question and them saying, no, look, the people are now, this is now, you know, the people have taken charge of this, they're up, you know, in rebellion against these things, and that's a good thing. And so I said, well, if that's true, if this is a genuine popular uprising across the board, then why are we at airports? Let's go to Wall Street in Washington and declare a socialist republic, because the people are now in the streets. let's raise their main demands, peace and bread, and the rest will fall into place. And, of course, that won't happen because many of the microphones that are organizing people will never say that. And also, I don't think that's where we're at yet, just in terms of the general condition of the working class. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you raise a very good point. What is it that sparks outrage? And it's Trump who sparks outrage. There were demonstrations like this when he was a candidate right after Election Day. So it's not surprising that when he makes a move like this so early in his administration, that protest is building upon what people have been doing for the past year. But there's still an unwillingness to tackle the most entrenched, the worst problems, the biggest offenders of human rights abuses in this country. I and others have pointed out America's biggest human rights problem is in the mass incarceration system. The most fascistic thing about this country
right.
is the mass incarceration system. People could march on the jails and demand that people be freed, but I don't see that happening.
Like in Delaware right now. I mean, today in Delaware, you could get 10,000 people to stand outside the prison there where there's a prison strike.
Yes, absolutely. So it could be against the police state. It could be against the banks. The banks ought to be nationalized. There could be a march against the banks, but there's still this very limited viewpoint about what most Democrats think is bad or wrong. And so Syrians, a Democratic president, can oversee the destruction of Syria and the killing of Syrians. But when people hear there's a Syrian being detained at the airport, then they fly into action. But we're silent when the worst abuses took place. So this is true about issues of foreign policy. It's true about issues of domestic policy. There's still this restriction of what is considered a thinkable thought, to use that term. So Occupy Wall Street was crushed. So, and that can be resurrected. That I think this mood of popular discontent can be used to resurrect movements that have disappeared. So I think it's some of these politicians also, like Mayor de Blasio here in New York, they're quick to say it's going to be a sanctuary city, but they still preside over police abuses, broken windows policy, and people of color in particular being targeted for police abuse, which means there's a risk of, no exaggeration, of death as well. So we can't let any of these people off the hook and let them jump on a bandwagon and look like they're human rights activists when they're not. And I think we can point out to people who are now demonstrating that other people have been demonstrating too, and invite them, and then we'll find out. We'll find out who's serious. And invite them to join us as we demonstrate against Wall Street or against the police state.
And finally, you mentioned, you write, the ruling classes prefer Obama-esque evil over Trump's for obvious reasons. They need a president who can commit wrongdoing with a smile, not a sneer, and that the people shouldn't be fooled by either one. I mean, that's the point that you just made. But mechanically speaking, how do we reach these people that are, you know, they are a good chunk of them over the demands that have been raised by people like de Blasio, Nadler, and others, and focus them on, you know, the real issues, the fundamental ones?
I think we need to join these protests. I have been thinking about that, too. I have noticed that these protesters are overwhelmingly white. They are, it's, you know, if you wanted to look at the electoral map, these protests have been strongest in places that Hillary Clinton won, on those slivers of both coasts, and a few Midwestern states that they didn't let Trump flip. That's where these protests have been taking place. So it's mostly educated white liberals who have been taking part. I say that we all join them and bring attention to many different issues, and let them know that there are other things. If they want to protest, there's a lot more. You could protest every day something in this country and come up with 365 different reasons, different things to fight against, and let them know that we're inviting them to join and protest with us, because many of these people here in New York during the worst days of police stop and frisk didn't say anything, even though this fascistic treatment of their fellow citizens was happening in plain view. They didn't say a word. So I think they can be reminded of that, and I think they can be asked to join. But I think those of us who are critics should not stand back either. We need to make our voices heard. And lastly, this, you know, using American exceptionalism to attack Trump is really quite hypocritical. This constant, this is un-American, this is not what Americans do. It is exactly what America has done in the past. There was a Chinese Exclusion Act, lest we forget. There have been many instances of discrimination against immigrants.
Haitians.
Along with Haitians, you know. So Cubans can be refugees, but America destroys Haiti, I don't know how many times, but Haitians cannot be considered refugee. They're now on the border of Mexico trying to get into the United States and being refused entry. So no American exceptionalist talk in attacking these policies. That needs to stop.
Margaret Kimberly has a weekly column at blackagendareport.com under the line Freedom Rider. This week's column, Trump is the less effective evil. Margaret, thank you very much. A pleasure as always.
Thank you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.